Welcome to the It's All Happening Women in CPG podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Calabrese, CPG advisor and now founder of It's All Happening, an agency that helps brands with launch strategy. Tune in as we break down ways that successful female entrepreneurs are using to build their businesses. You'll hear stories of the people who make shit happen, overcoming struggles and celebrating the wins. We cover how brands are taking products to market, tactics that work, things that have failed, and just lessons learned from out in the field. Whether you're looking for inspiration, industry secrets, or launching a brand, this is the place. Okay, you guys, I just hung up with Francesca Pizzaluca, who is the rad co-founder of Ciao Poppy. Ciao Poppy is inspired by Francesca's father, who came from Italy and where meals were a super important part of his culture. No matter how busy their lives were, they always made a point and a time to share meals together. And that's what she's trying to channel in Ciao Poppy. I loved this conversation today. We really dive into how she got going, her approach to funding, bootstrapping, and how they've stayed regional and local. And they're just now starting to get outside of California. We go over her Whole Foods rollout and how that all panned out for them and how Francesca is building this brand on her own terms, bringing her family tradition to the grocery store. So without further ado, my conversation with Francesca. Francesca, welcome to the It's All Happening Women in CPG podcast. Thank you for being here.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Danielle.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to chatting with you today. You are the founder of Ciao Poppy, which is a marinara sauce for the modern family. I love that tagline so much. Hey. It's so cute. So you guys launched in 2022. You have distribution in Whole Foods, Bristol Farms, and many other natural grocers. I was just on your store locator yesterday, and I love your distribution strategy. You're really concentrated in the SoCal area. So like I said, I'm looking forward to digging in on all things sauce and brand and business. But before we do, what are you currently hustling for?
It's a great question. Definitely have learned that the toxic hustler way is not healthy nor productive. So that was my first year and a half of entrepreneurship and, you know, wasn't sustainable. But what we are hustling for in a healthy way is we're really trying to ride the wave of just, you know, great progress and momentum. I feel like we've had such a year of luck and an opportunity. And so, you know, we're really trying to make the most of all of the opportunities that are, you know, have been presented to us. So we've got a lot of expansion and growth and just really an exciting time to bring on some more people and support. And yeah, so I think riding this wave of opportunity.
I love that. Tell us about yourself. Tell us about your background. What, I'm like very curious, what was happening before your sauce company? What was life like? What were you doing?
I came from 15 years in the fashion industry. So I worked in marketing and PR in the luxury goods space. So certainly have a little bit of a different take and perspective on, you know, how to approach a conventional and consumer good from that environment. You know, I definitely felt like it was very exciting to kind of bring a little bit of flavor, fashion, and color to a very dated space and category, but in a really tasteful way. So the fashion industry was incredible. I loved it. There's so much about it that I do still miss, but I had sort of hit a pinnacle in my career there where really looking for something different, looking to really stretch myself and to learn. And you know, had been in a year of consulting for a number of clients and said, you know, hey, like, let's make this sauce that everybody, all my friends and family keep asking for. You know, my dad had moved back to Italy about 15 years ago. And so when he does come in town and cook, he's famous for making these, you know, big friends and family dinners, you know, at our house when he's here. And so it was a way for my dad and I to kind of stay connected when we're 3,000 miles away, but also share a little piece of, you know, what people got so excited about.
Yeah.
Here we are. So, but it's a very different life now than what it was pre-Ciao Poppy. So, but I love it. Wouldn't trade it.
I love it. You know, I work with lots of early stage founders, and so many founders just come from different industries and somehow land in CPG, food and beverage. But I love it when founders come from fashion, because I feel like people from fashion really understand the importance of brand building in the early days, because there's oftentimes folks that come from other industries that don't really understand that. But I love it when I meet people that come from fashion, because I feel like fashion people get it.
It is fun. It is fun. And I think coming from luxury too, is I'm just so trained in the fact of, you know, really quality is king, and, you know, making sure that you have a really, really sound and good product. You know, I never worked for trend brands. So, you know, I probably lean more on the side that, you know, trend is temporary and quality will have, you know, a lasting life. So it's really influenced the way that, you know, we've built Shop Happy.
So what was the vision for the brand, and how did you identify that there was a gap in the market? Obviously, your dad had this incredible recipe, and I'm surely you've been enjoying it for, you know, years with your family. But like, were you looking at anything? Were you looking at data? Or you just really wanted to like commercialize this incredible product that your family makes?
I mean, to be completely transparent, I went into the industry extremely naive. I mean, it was truly like a fun passion project. And then, you know, when we did launch here in LA, I think we were very quickly realized that, oh my gosh, there is a huge need for something that has a West Coast story within the category. You know, fortunately in Los Angeles and being LA based, we have so many beautiful shops and gourmet marketplaces and independents that really latch onto local products and local stories. And, you know, there really wasn't anyone speaking to the pasta sauce category in a local way with a West Coast spirit. And so that was pretty evident to us straight out the gate. I'm like, wow, you know, there's tons of Italian American stories that we hear about the West, you know, the East Coast. There's the very Sicilian and East Coast narrative and pretty much every brand in the pasta sauce category, but there just wasn't one that really, you know, brought these two coasts together of the Italian coast where my family's from and our California life here. So we just had a really strong response in our first year from our local community and our local stores. And so, you know, we really leaned into that. And it's been the first year and a half was really, really honing in on our identity and who we are and where we want to be and what we want to say with Shop Happy. So I didn't start the brand with a ton of brand exercises or, you know, really a ton of planning. It was really, you know, let's make this great product and see what happens. And it would be a great honor to my dad and to our family. And it sort of just has evolved and blossomed to be, you know, something much greater. So very, started in a very authentic, innocent way, if you will. Yeah. I mean, it's,
yeah, totally. As lots of great brands do. So talk to us about how you first got started. You guys have been on shelves for, you know, a little over 3 years. You know, oftentimes people underestimate like how long it's going to take to like actually get on shelf and gain distribution. I'm curious, like, to hear from you in your own words about like the grit and the focus that it's taken for you to get where you are today.
I mean, we have been self-funded, you know, from the start, you know, as bootstrap as it comes, you know, especially in the first year or two. I think, again, kind of going back to the, you know, we started with sort of no plan, except we just wanted to create this great product. And you know, there's a million ways to start a CPG business, and you certainly can go into it much more planned and prepared that, you know, than we were. But on the other hand, it was a great way to start because, you know, I don't think we were looking for perfection when we started. I think it was really, truly an honest company that we wanted to build. And, you know, we learned so much in the first year, as anyone does in their first year of business, whether you have a plan or you don't, especially if you don't come from the industry. But we wanted to take that first 1 to 2 years to really learn the ropes, figure it out, make sure that we're making smart and sound business decisions, you know, make mistakes at a low cost before we really invested in, you know, other resources and kind of growth financing options. So it was truly a learning period that first year. And I think bootstrapping it is totally a really smart way to start a business, just because you learn so much in the beginning.
Yeah.
And you're really trying to kind of also just get your sea legs in the industry and with your brand. So really until I would say the last year to 16 months, you know, we've been in such a learning period and sort of, you know, preparing to really take off. So yeah, totally on our own for a while. So
yeah, amazing. So who were some of your first retailers? And tell us how you actually got those products on shelf. Did you start with a co-packer right away?
We did. We had sort of modeled out different options of doing, you know, sort of commercial kitchen versus co-packer. And it didn't really make sense for our product to do a commercial kitchen. It was too time consuming. So we took a lot of time to source a very artisanal kind of small batch co-packer that could get us going and, you know, really give us the quality we were looking for.
So then you have your inventory, right? And how did you start selling in? Like, what were you doing? What did that process look like for you when you've got your first set of samples?
Well, before we launched about 2 weeks prior, it was, you know, Christmas time, holidays. And I, you know, shout out to Allie Ball for Retail Ready because I did take her retail preparation
course. Oh, she's the best. I'm so glad.
Yeah, no, it was, and thank God I did because, I mean, it truly, I don't know if I didn't have those resources and information, it would have taken me probably twice as long.
Yeah.
Totally. And so, you know, having those tools to kind of get out there and get going, I think was a huge advantage. We were very lucky that we had a lot of yeses in the beginning and it was, you know, very much picking up the phone and calling, talking to store owners, you know, making and building that relationship, asking if we can send samples, and then just, you know, kind of building that, you know, local presence. And then once you lock in a few doors that were, you know, notable, I mean, we had Juicer Grocer and Farm Shop and some of these places that were really great for discovery also that other buyers from other, you know, places were coming to find new products.
Yeah.
That really helps kind of expand our visibility. And then, you know, we were getting a ton of inquiries on Fair and, you know, kind of specialty stores and that sort of thing. So having some of those notable names really helped propel, you know, interest from other specialty. And we were really pretty much solely specialty for our first 2.5-3 years. You know, we launched in Whole Foods just this January, 6 months ago. And then now we're getting into natural food and grocers things. But you know, that was such an important part and way for us to begin because we could really cultivate that foodie customer and people who were really interested in artisanal products and local products and kind of get that shelf credibility before moving into, you know, grocery, which was, you know, we're still very selective with what natural grocers we do approach and enter into, but it was a great way to start and just have that notoriety first.
Yeah. And I feel like probably at the time you guys started, the market was pretty penetrated with like Rao's and Carbone. And pasta sauce is just such a staple. It doesn't matter what ethnicity, every family has a jar of pasta sauce in their pantry. It's like almost like the same as mac and cheese, like any family in America that has kids has a box of mac and cheese as an emergency. It's like the same thing with pasta sauce. I feel like there's not a week that goes by that we don't like restock the jar of sauce. So yeah. I can imagine like being a new player in that space and having this local story that people were like stoked to have you and to try the product out.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, business is also so much about timing, you know,
so we
launched and then, you know, 10 months later, Rao sold for $2.7 billion. So we had a great opportunity to not only have a ton of eyeballs in the categories to kind of, you know, who's next and who's filling the space of, you know, Rao's legacy, but a lot of customers that we're seeing, you know, don't want to buy Rao's anymore because they're too big and they're, you know, now with Campbell's and the quality's changed, they are seeking kind of something that's going to, you know, really satisfy their family needs that, you know, has clean ingredients and, you know, really feels a little bit like Rao's 15 years ago, you know, in a way. So it's good. It was all positive timing on that front. But, you know, I think to your point, I mean, data in America is like, you know, 3 to 4 times per month families are buying pasta sauce. So it's definitely a pantry staple.
I'm always looking for cool new brands too that have like high quality ingredients because we have an Italian family over here and like pasta is very, very important. So
Hey, founders, are you sick of throwing stuff at a wall and hoping it sticks? I see so many brands launch unprofitable products and they wonder why they can never get ahead and figure out how to build a sustainable CPG business. Are you ready to stop guessing and start profiting from day one? Introducing my profit plan. It's a 90-minute audit that slices through the noise with real tactical clarity on your specific brand and cost of goods. I'm Danielle, a CPG operator who's launched 30-plus brands, generated over $50 million in sales, and I'm handing you the playbook. No fluff, no theory, just profit, margin, and scale mapped out for your brand, and I only take on 10 spots a month. So stop spinning and start scaling the smart way. Trust me, you will not regret this. Book your profit plan at the link in the show notes and go from almost ready to ready for shelf and sustainability and profitability.
Okay, so I want to chat about distribution. So I mentioned I was on your store locator yesterday.
Yeah.
Your distribution is just in Southern California right now, correct?
We do distribute nationwide, you know, to direct retail. And we're on Amazon and, of course, our website. But with our distributor, when it comes to grocery, we are just regional. So we have
a distributor here in
SoCal. And then we just opened distribution in NorCal. So strategically, we're still kind of, you know, state focused.
So let's talk about that, because a lot of early stage brands, they go like wide before they're ready. And I love that you've taken this regional approach and like really kept things on your home turf. Can you share with us just why you have chosen to do that? Because I'm sure it's a strategic move and I'm sure a lot of it has to do with costs, et cetera. So I would just love to hear from you on that bit.
Just to say, you know, we made the mistake early on to go too big, too fast.
And, you know,
we did go in with a retailer in the Midwest and in DC that, you know, it didn't work out because we were too young. We didn't have the marketing budget to really introduce our product the way that it should have been. I'm not there. I'm not able to really hustle and, you know, demo and be in stores and shake hands and, you know, meet people, meet the community or do events. So it just, we were too far away from our product to make sure that it was successful. And so we made the decision to say, you know what, let's bring everything back here. It doesn't make sense to have 3 distribution, 4 distribution centers that are just, you know, we're losing money on, in the sense of, you know, it's too far to manage and ship and move around. So we brought everything back to LA. We really focused on, and this was, you know, probably at the end of our first year, and really just focused on this region, because, you know, if we only have to pay for 1 fulfillment center, 1 warehouse, you know, work with just a handful of distributors, you know, it helps kind of keep all of our shipment costs low, our management and warehouse fees low. And, you know, I'm here so I can really have an eye on the product and have an eye on the business and growth and make sure that we really are successful and crushing it in the region that we're doing. So we have a really strong velocity story to say, you know, when we are trying to grow and we're ready for that step.
Yeah.
So it's important to, I think, cultivate where you are in your backyard, because you're, you know, there's nothing better than the founder and their family and their community being present, really being the person sharing the story of the product. So I'm personally very involved in everything we do from an outside customer and community interaction experience. So it is really important that, you know, I can be present for that. So, and we've seen it really work well. So I think most founders will have the most success that way, is just really
focusing on your home turf.
Absolutely.
Especially in the early days, it's flattering to get an approval from a retailer that has clout in another territory. But you're right, if you don't have the marketing dollars to set it up, and also the cost, the minute you like ship product out of your home turf, the freight costs get so much higher, the velocity gets lower because people don't know you, and it can become super problematic if resources are already like really tight. Yeah, it's interesting that you learned that lesson, but I feel like it's so common.
Why wouldn't you want to say yes in the beginning? You're like, you know, this is so exciting, amazing, woo, and it's great, but it's you'll learn quickly that it's expensive. And so, you know, if you're not really prepared to have that expansion, you know, and invest in the growth, it's better to wait and just be patient and allocate your budget elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned that you guys started off bootstrapped. So how have you continually bootstrapped the company? Have you brought in outside investors? Have you taken out loans, debt financing? Like, how have you funded the company in the last couple of years?
All of the above.
Yeah.
I mean, we truly started in our garage. So, I mean, it was me packing and shipping, and thank God we have a UPS like four blocks away, because, you know, taking shipments in my car every single day, you know, it also got very heavy. My back started hurting. You know, there was a lot of, you know, operations in our garage that were happening in the first couple of years, but, you know, we scaled up at the right time. And, you know, this year we have been able to hire help and support and, you know, move into fulfillment, and we have a distributor, and we're hiring salesperson. Like, it takes time, but obviously, you know, you kind of have to wear all the hats in the beginning, and, you know, bit by bit, you can, you know, start to kind of prove yourself and prove the business and its success, where we can, you know, of course, attract investors. Grants have been really beneficial. And, you know, I know they're very time consuming and it takes a lot of work, and there's an art of grant writing, but I, you know, couldn't recommend that enough to, you know, especially early stage founders, to really seek those opportunities, because, you know, it's essentially free money and doesn't take any equity, and you can do whatever you want with it. So those are great. And then we did start taking on investors about a year and a half ago, mostly this year, which is awesome. And, you know, at this stage, they're all female investors. Coincidentally, which is super cool. Couldn't be here without the guys in my life and in the world, but, you know, it was just really interesting to see how many women have come on board, which is really exciting.
Amazing.
And then, of course, yeah, I mean, SBA loans, like, there's so many different ways to manage debt financing. I think it becomes also an art in itself to figure out how to, you know, move around and do stuff, but you just got to get creative and really educate yourself on the resources out there and, you know, figure out what works best for your business.
Yeah. Yeah. Francesca, what is the long-term vision for the brand? Do you hope to have additional product lines? Are you just going to be focused on sauce? Would you like to have an acquisition one day? Like, how do you see the evolution of the brand coming together over the years?
I mean, Chop Hoppy has so much potential. I think, yes, we are looking at, we are developing a couple of flavors and just kind of waiting for the right time to, you know, introduce them, most likely some point next year. I don't really believe in going too wide with too many SKUs until we really have national success with our core three flavors.
Yep.
So we're kind of toying around with timing for that. But I think just based on Chop Hoppy's cultural authenticity and how much range it has across Italian food pantry potential, just, you know, elevating the Italian food pantry space and the, you know, American grocery, there's really an opportunity for us to go into so many categories. You know, I think Poppy being the sort of figurehead that, you know, really reinvents that old Chef Boyardee kind of personality, but he really gets to be part of your family and part of everyone's family.
Yeah.
He's a larger than life character that we certainly feel strongly about his representation and what he means for the Italian heritage, but really done in a modern way and for families of today that, you know, are really, you know, looking for better for you food. And of course, the things that are going to speak more to what people are looking for now and in their kitchen. So much opportunity for sure.
It really is. Yeah. Well, that kind of leads me to my next question that I was going to ask you earlier, but this is like the right time, I think. You know, how do you balance staying true to the cultural heritage of the product and the traditions while also keeping it modern? You know, like, I think you've done a really great job of marrying the two, but like, how do you balance that? Because I imagine you think about that, like, across the whole brand, like in branding and sales and, you know, in the business, et cetera.
Well, first of all, you can't fool consumers today. You know, they're so smart and they're so receptive to kind of brand authenticity that, you know, you really either have to have a strong identity and story that is real.
Yeah.
Or you can't fake it, you know, or it's really not going to.
I completely agree.
Yeah. And I think people really connect with depth. And so Poppy, again, is really kind of our representation of that Italian piece of things, but, you know, done in a really timeless way. And, you know, we want to make sure that we feel like the design of our packaging and the brand experience is something that, you know, can live for many years to come and has a timelessness to it. But, you know, we get to play a little bit and have fun with the brand too. So, and I think that's important for our demographic, which, you know, are mostly millennials and families and, you know, who have a little bit of charisma and playfulness in their household and in their kitchen. But we're still a very serious product in the sense that, you know, we have our certifications and we're, you know, very health driven and clean label. And so those are things that, you know, we do take very, very seriously and make sure that we're still checking the boxes of good quality. So
Francesca, what has it been like for you as a woman in this world of CPG ops? Like, how amazing that you have all women on your cap table. Like, congrats to you. I freaking love that. But like, just working in the distributor, the sales world, the, you know, the broker world, which is like traditionally dominated by men. Like, what's that been like for you?
It's interesting because in fashion, it's actually a lot of females in fashion. You know, you have a lot of women who work in fashion. So I think, but it's still, you know, your CEOs and executives in fashion are primarily men still. So but I think CPG, you know, there are a ton of us women founders in CPG, which is great
to see.
Yes.
And these days, yes.
You know, you see it more and more, and I think it's super exciting. I think to your point on the ops and business side, there's still such an old school way and nature of doing things, which is, you know, sometimes a little frustrating, but I also love working with men too. So it's not either way. I mean, I love working with both men and women. There's no bias there by any means. I think the industry is making a shift on the way that they're doing operations and how they're kind of, you know, modernizing a lot of these functions.
Agree.
When it comes to grocery and the food industry. And that's exciting to see because it hasn't changed in decades. So it's great to kind of see a mix of everybody. But I think on the manufacturing side, it's been the hardest, as is a woman. But that I think is the toughest. But it's okay. You know, toughens your skin a little bit. You got to deal with, you know, some of these tougher guys. But it's fine.
Yeah, you learn a lot too. And I think, like with anything, at the beginning, when you come in with less experience, regardless of your gender, people like look at you differently. So, you know, but once you have a couple of years under your belt, I think the conversation definitely changes.
Yeah, I agree. And like anything, once you grow, you have leverage. So, you know, you have to get there. So it's been nice to see how much community there is in the CPG space with women and also women championing women. And, you know, that's been really exciting as a just founder entrepreneur. There are just so many resources that, you know, help uplift and support and create space for wanting to see other women succeed. So that's been really refreshing.
Agree. Yeah. Yeah. So I just want to chat about marketing real quick. So what are you like, what's working for you guys right now? Like, what are you doing in terms of marketing? I imagine because you're very retail focused, like you're probably spending at retail on like, you know, just like the traditional like grocery stuff. But like, what else is there like a couple things that you're doing that you're like, this is definitely worth the ROI for us right now?
For us, sampling has always been, and demos have always been a top priority because we have such a high conversion rate on sales when we are sampling. Because once people do get to try the sauce, it, you know, they love it, they see it, you know, they
instant purchase.
Totally. So I think that's been really important for us, both to just make sure we're hitting our goals and our velocity, but also making sure we're getting that in-person connection and in-person experience with customers. You know, we are up against legacy brands and these big guys in the space. So it's important that we're able to kind of stand out and make a personal connection. So that's been always successful for us. I think, you know, our second year, I did like 200 sampling events. It was insane. So now we have a great team of ambassadors that are kind of out and about, but they're really critical to, you know, our growth, especially in some of these new retailers. You know, we certainly are very active on social, and I think storytelling is really important. There's so much more I would love to lean into, you know, when we do have the budgets.
Yeah. You're like, we could spend so much money on marketing.
Oh my gosh.
No problem. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I'm a marketer, so I mean, gosh, like I would just go nuts, but trying to really be smart about spending wherever we spend our money, it's got to give us a return in sales. So, you know, being thoughtful as to kind of how heavy we go on sales marketing, but also brand marketing. You know, there's also a lot of ways you can do free PR and free social and free digital exposure. And we do a ton of partnerships. So I think we have a really exciting and fun holiday bundle that we're introducing.
I love it.
In early September. So that's been kind of our opportunity to get a little press buzz around gift guide. And so, you know, really helping that piece of it by leaning on other brands and kind of saying, how can we maximize our exposure and efforts, you know, in a really resourceful way. Yeah. I mean, I do all the PR pitching myself also. So it's.
So organic social brand partnerships and demos are really your focus right now.
That's right.
And then your PR outreach as well too. Yeah. I feel like I've really gotten into this in the last couple of years. Like for people on a budget, DIY PR is something that founders can absolutely do pretty easily and get traction with versus, because most folks just, let's just be honest, like do not have PR budgets, right? Especially to work with some of these, like even mid-sized agencies can have, even small agencies can have hefty retainers, but there absolutely is ways to connect with editors doing it yourself.
I agree. I mean, and one thing I noticed even in the PR space and coming from fashion, as you know, I mean, there's fashion, you have press days and, you know, you build these presentations around collection presentations, you know, on every season, summer, fall, resort, whatever that might be. And that doesn't exist in food and CPG. Yeah. So, you know, it's like, let's do a press lunch. Let's do a press day. Let's get a few brands together and, you know, taste our product, show our product, invite a bunch of journalists. You know, there's ways you can kind of get creative, you know, that even those journalists and writers get to see and do something different. So that's been fun.
So what is next? What can like we look forward to seeing you guys out there in the world? It sounds like you're being super strategic about like SKU expansion, but like the next couple of years, do you have any retailers that you're expanding into? Any? So you said you just recently rolled out NorCal. Is that with Whole Foods?
No. So we have actually already an existing presence in NorCal, and we're hoping to expand, of course, and grow with Whole Foods. They're such an important partner for us. But that would be a region that we do bring on our first salesperson and help sort of grow that market. It's our lowest hanging fruit. And then, you know, the surrounding West Coast regions. So that's definitely a priority and focus. You know, we're obviously leaning into more flavors and exploring that expansion and what that R&D looks like.
Yeah.
But really just growth right now and trying to make sure that we're really you know, doing a good job, you know, here. I mean, I believe that there's a $10 million business in California alone.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, if you were to stay focused on California and do 10 million versus doing five in California and five somewhere else, like your P&L will look very, very different.
For sure. For sure.
So I think that's super, super smart. I love to hear that. I love it when brands just like stay really focused on their territory. They just, you end up being so much more profitable.
And we're excited and we want people to want us in other regions. You know, I think we want to build great buzz here and, you know, go into other markets with enthusiasm and excitement and get, you know, people really stoked to bring us on, you know? So I think, you know, that's, and before we really go into the East Coast, which of course will be inevitable and we're excited about the opportunity, we want to have some muscle behind us before we break into the East Coast market. There's just so many more pasta sauce brands just by nature of the Italian immigration population there.
Yep.
But I know we can do it. And I think we'll be refreshing too. So it's just a matter of time, but yeah.
Well, last question, sage advice for a founder just starting out, or even like advice that you would give to someone that wants to turn a family recipe into a real business. Like what's your founder advice for anyone out there listening?
Yeah. I touched on this a little bit earlier, but I think, you know, don't look for perfection. Just get going. You know, you're going to learn so much along the way. And the experience of being a CPG founder is way more than just creating a product. You know, what you'll learn about yourself and, you know, how you will evolve as a business person and how that will influence your brand is so rewarding. So really just dive in and jump in and don't be afraid to ask questions. Latch onto any resource, referral, recommendation, conversation you can have, because there's really no right or wrong playbook for this. I think, you know, it's all about how you want to build your business. And that's what is so cool about it. But I think also taking advice from people who've done it or people in the industry who can give you sound direction is really, really important too, because I've saved myself a lot of mistakes by asking questions and trying to get advice. And I think every person who's helped has always been able to connect me with somebody else. And that's kind of what you want, is to be able to build this network and, you know, community of people who can really help you be successful. So it's, CPG is one of the hardest industries to be in, but it's also one of the most supportive because of how passionate people are.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Thank you so much, Francesca.
You're so welcome.
Where can we find you? Where can listeners find Ciao Pappy?
ChiaoPappy.com or on Amazon.com if you're not in the California area or Southern California area. Otherwise, if you are here, local to where we're based, we're in Whole Foods, Bristol Farms. We've got a few more retailers opening in Northern California, and then a ton of specialty stores nationwide. Yeah. So definitely check our store locator.
Yay. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
it was
Danielle.
Great chatting
so
with
much.
You. Talk to you soon.
You too. Okay. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the It's All Happening Women in CPG podcast. It would mean so much to me if you like, subscribe, or share this episode with anyone who you think needs to hear. And if you're launching a brand and you need a CPG strategy advisor, visit my website to check out what we have to offer. I host free workshops from time to time. You have to sign up for emails to hear about those. And you can join Launch Lab, which is our group cohort that teaches you the four critical phases of launching your CPG brand and how to actually execute your launch quickly. We also do one-on-one advising. So if you book a profit plan session, I will assess your product profitability and recommend a package that works for you. You can book a call at itsallhappeningagency.co. You can email us at hi@itsallhappeningagency.co. And follow us on Instagram at It's All Happening Co. See you soon.